supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Tom McDonald, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. This time last year, things weren't looking good for two Delaware County municipalities. The borough of Colwyn and the city of Chester were both facing the possibility of state takeover if they didn't straighten out their finances. WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports on what difference a year makes in their attempts to balance their books.
There are a lot of struggling municipalities in Pennsylvania, places where the costs to provide services and the revenues brought in just don't add up. Colwyn Borough and the city of Chester are on opposite ends of a spectrum of how that can happen. Colwyn is a Philadelphia bedroom community of fewer than 3,000 people. Its main ailment is mismanagement, and public fights between residents and officials are the most visible symptom. That's from a borough council meeting last December. Chester is a formerly industrial city of more than 34,000. It's a more typical picture of declining Pennsylvania cities, where businesses and residents have left in droves. But while Colwyn and Chester have some different problems, their medicine is the same, a state-led intervention program called Act 47. In Colwyn, state-hired consultants like Daniel Connolly have been working with elected officials to make changes in 2016.
They did hire a borough manager. They've made huge gains in building the financial management infrastructure. They've hired a treasurer who's been instrumental in producing regular financial reports.
That's a big step forward for a place that didn't have any coherent financial records for several years. In Chester, the state's medicine was harder to swallow.
It's a lot of money being spent, you feel what I'm saying? And, you know, what are we recovering from? Are we recovering from something that's, you know, self-inflicted? Are we recovering from something you guys have messed up? Because
Teron Freeman spoke for many residents at a meeting in August, frustrated by more than 20 years of state interventions. They said the plan for Chester, a city with a high violent crime rate, goes too far in cutting public safety.
You're talking about shutting down fire departments. You're talking about cutting back police officers in a city where you got people getting killed every week. You feel what I'm saying?
The state's plan for the city does call for drastic measures to rein in the Chester Police and Fire Department's pension costs. This year, city officials have taken steps to curb those costs in new labor contracts, says the city's chief financial officer, Nafis Nichols.
Some of the things that you'll see in the fire deal will be around the retirement age. There will be an increase to kind of keep people around longer to have more contributions go into the pension fund.
They've also raised earned income taxes on residents and lowered business taxes with the hope of eventually boosting the city's revenues. After decades of financial decline, Nichols asks Chester residents to have patience.
This didn't happen overnight. It's not going to be fixed overnight.
He says Chester's on the right track. The city's budget projects a $4 million surplus in 2017. For WHYY, I'm Laura Benchoff.
Drones are becoming more and more popular. The Federal Aviation Administration estimates that more than 2.5 million drones were sold last year. But flying a drone is one thing. Knowing the history behind them and the rules that govern how people can fly drones is a whole other matter. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, a class starting later this month at Stockton University is aiming to educate students about these flying robots.
Adam Greco teaches Introduction to Unmanned Aviation Systems.
I call my class Keeping Up with the Drones. It's a cute title. They like it.
Greco works for the Federal Aviation Administration outside Atlantic City, and he says that drones are becoming more popular, more ubiquitous, and more useful than ever.
This is something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. We call it basically a disruptive industry, okay? It has turned things upside down.
Greco says a growing number of people are flying drones for fun, but drones are also being used for things like security, farming, cell phone tower inspection, and package delivery. And that's why, he says, it's increasingly important to know the issues surrounding drones. The class covers things like the history of the technology, the laws governing how drones can be used, and the rules about flying them, as well as thornier issues like privacy and the Fourth Amendment.
People don't want to be bothered in their backyard when their young daughter is sunbathing, And it's understandable. Okay, it is a privacy issue.
The most important part of the class to Greco is about how drones can be used in innovative ways. He says, for example, some of his former students now work for real estate companies, shooting video of the inside and outside of available houses.
When a person comes in and want to look at X amount of houses, they don't have to drive out to every single house. Now on DVD, they have high definition photography of exactly what the house looks like.
The class is in its third year, and according to Greco, the curriculum is always changing. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
The region's Republicans in Congress are looking forward to controlling the White House for the first time in 8 years. We had our Washington correspondent, Matt Lasko, ask some of them what's on their wish list this legislative year.
After Superstorm Sandy, remember that picture of the iconic Jetstar roller coaster in the water off Seaside Heights? That's in Republican Tom MacArthur's district. While this election hinged more on big, hyperpartisan national issues than on local issues, MacArthur says in his backyard, the reauthorization of the National Flood Insurance Program is on the top of his list in 2017.
I expect to be very involved in that process, and I want to make sure we get a reauthorization that includes a federal backstop for the people that live in flood-prone zones like mine.
President-elect Trump was able to win rural parts of Pennsylvania with soaring promises of revitalizing coal and manufacturing. But now that the campaign rhetoric is meeting reality, Republicans are trying to tamp down those promises. Republican Charlie Dent from the Lehigh Valley says he thinks energy development could be the answer.
I don't know that you'll ever be able to bring back integrated steel producers like we had in my area, Bethlehem Steel, for example. But if President-elect Trump plays the energy issue right and is as friendly to gas development as I think he will, that will be a huge boon to domestic manufacturing of all types.
One of the big debates that's dividing the GOP is how to repeal Obamacare without getting punished by the millions of people who could lose their insurance unless the law is properly replaced. Dent says the party has time to come up with a solution.
I think a lot of this depends on what the Trump administration wants to do. We're going to have to hear from the Trump administration how they want to go about this.
Some in the GOP are angling to repeal the law and replace it in 3 years or so, while others want to swap it out at once. New Jersey Republican Leonard Lance says timing is less important than getting the policy right.
I don't want to go back to the status quo that existed before its enactment, but I do think it needs a significant revision because so many of my constituents are paying enormous increases in premiums.
The other big issue Lance wants to tackle is tax reform. He's hoping the GOP can alleviate the tax burden on individuals and on businesses in the first year Trump is in office.
I think that any president is most effective in his first year in office, and this was true with President Reagan in his tax reform in 1981, and I hope it will be true of President Trump in 2017.
As for Democrats, there doesn't seem to be much to cheer about in the new year. They're in the minority in the House and the Senate, which puts them on defense. They don't have many options at their disposal. Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware says one of the first battles will likely be over Trump's cabinet nominations.
Well, President-elect Trump has nominated a wide range of people to fill different cabinet positions, some of whom bring a terrific reserve of relevant experience, others who seem largely or completely unqualified for the posts to which they've been nominated.
Coons was a part of a younger group of Democratic senators who lobbied their leaders to lower the threshold for nominees from 60 votes to a mere simple majority of 51. That change looks like it's coming back to bite them, because now they're largely powerless to stop nominees they oppose. Still, Coons is hopeful.
If we get to a point where common sense says that a particular nominee just isn't qualified for the job, my hope and expectation is that there will be Republicans who will join us in holding up a few confirmations.
Coons says there's bipartisan agreement on one thing.
Well, it's going to be an interesting Congress.
For WHYY News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
For many, a new year offers the prospect of change. That desire to change typically manifests in the annual tradition of writing a list of New Year's resolutions. According to researchers from the University of Scranton, around 8% of people are actually successful in keeping those goals. Ann Hoffman has more from the Behavioral Health Desk.
The problem with most New Year's resolutions is scale. They're too big.
If they can be put into bite-sized pieces, those are the ones that can be most effective for people and have more long-lasting results.
That's Paul Nolan, a music therapist who teaches at Drexel. Nolan believes people run into trouble when they make a big resolution, like trying to declutter their messy house. A better goal, he says, is something small, like downsizing their music collection. He says those bigger goals that we hear so much about, like losing weight or enjoying life to the fullest, have to do with a psychological process called wish fulfillment. The idea, he says, is that if someone loses weight, they believe they'll be better liked by others. Shame and guilt can be factors as well.
Or even unconsciously to please like a deceased parent. You know, my dad would like me better if I wasn't so fat.
Kim Dove, a licensed clinical social worker who runs the men's trauma program at Princeton House in Moorestown, says there's social pressure to set resolutions.
I think with the new year comes the expectation that we're going to be healthier and we're going to be happier and we're going to be better versions of ourselves.
She says that one practice that can create more effective goal setting is telling other people.
When you tell other people, not only do you invite other people into your journey, but you're also held accountable in a way.
Since humans are creatures of habit, Dove says change is difficult and takes time, which isn't an easy sell in a culture that values quick fixes and instant gratification. But breaking down goals into manageable pieces and looking at what obstacles are in the way can be effective strategies. Anne Hoffman, WHYY News.
With a contentious presidential election, racially charged violence, and a string of celebrity deaths making headlines in the waning months of 2016, Americans have generally been looking back on the past year negatively. But NewsWorks blogger Solomon Jones is optimistic as he looks ahead. For him, 2017 could potentially be a year defined by hope.
As we move into a new year, the triumphs and failures of 2016 loom large. We survived an election that laid bare the differences that divide us. We watched in horror as violence ravaged our city streets. We saw the distortion of a simple and poignant phrase, Black Lives Matter. We watched as optimism gave way to anger and fear. As a black man, it breaks my heart to know that in 2016, African American men comprised 34% of the unarmed people killed by police, though we make up only 6% of the population. It hurts me to know that in a city like Chicago, more than 700 homicides took place, mostly in poor neighborhoods filled with people of color. It pains me to know that in 2016, our incoming president would cheapen our democracy by thanking blacks for not voting. And still, I'm optimistic, because 2016 sets the stage for the return of an essential need, hope. In 2017, hope won't be driven by political promises. It won't be pushed by the culture of celebrity. It won't be recorded in social media friendships. No, this hope will be driven by that basic need that makes us human. This hope will be driven by relationships. Only true relationships can share the joy of triumph or push us through our struggles or make us whole again. But in order to have such relationships, we must first acknowledge that we've been separated by culture and ethnicity, by skin color and religion, by political and social beliefs. Then we must do everything we can to bridge those divides. Unfortunately, there's no easy way to do so, and we'll see that in 2017. This year, those who've been targeted by demagogues will be forced to come together. Those who've been identified as outsiders will have to unite. Those who feel empowered by hatred will have to face themselves. And in the midst of it all, each of us, no matter who we are, we'll have to hope. And hope is much more than some imaginary concept. It is something each of us possesses. Each time we take a step forward, we hope that another step will follow. Each time we take a breath, we hope that the next is not our last. Each time we see the sunrise, we hope to see it rise again. Each time we reach for someone, we hope that they'll reach back. In 2017, I'll reach out to those who think as I do, and I'll reach out to those who don't. I'll form relationships across ideological divides and shape those relationships with hope. I hope we'll stop talking long enough to listen. I hope we'll listen well enough to understand. I hope our understanding will be deep enough to bring change, and I hope that change will be profound enough to make a difference. That is the 2017 I hope for. Let's pray it's the 2017 we'll have. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment blog at newsworks.org. As the world looks ahead to 2017, Newsworks Tonight's Dave Heller and the Franklin Institute's Derek Pitts are looking above to the stars. In this week's edition of Sky Talk, the two give some perspective on what to watch for in space science in 2017 by looking back on the top stories and discoveries of the past year.
What can be more exciting than to consider the possibility of life beyond that exists on our planet?
One of the biggest highlights to come out of the year last year was the identification of a potentially habitable planet orbiting the closest star to Earth, Proxima B.
So not only is it potentially habitable, it's also relatively close to us.
And that's really the big key to this. You know, the potentially habitable portion of this is something that gets bandied about a number of exoplanets, planets discovered orbiting other stars. The real key here is that, in this case, this planet is orbiting a star that is closer to us than any other, as you said. What that does is it opens the door for the possibility at some point in the not-too-distant future
of taking a vacation there.
Perhaps.
If only we could advance at the speed of light, how far away would it be?
If we could go at the speed of light, it would be a mere 4 years away.
Not too bad.
And 4 years back, too, so it's an 8-year round trip. But if we think about how much time we've spent in space altogether of any one person, it's kind of a long trip.
So back to this specific planet, what do we know of its temperature, size, atmosphere?
Well, what we know is that for this particular star, this particular planet happens to be in that star's habitable zone. That would be the region around this star where liquid water could exist on this planet. So that's one of the things that makes it potentially habitable. The other thing that makes it potentially habitable is the information we can glean from instruments observing is that it more likely is a rocky planet than being a molten planet, let's say, or a frozen planet. So these two factors allow us to entertain the possibility that it's habitable. We don't have direct evidence yet that it's habitable, but indications suggest this possibility.
Not merely a blackboard exercise, another advancement this past year comes in the form of nailing down this notion of gravitational waves.
Oh, this is a major piece. When Albert Einstein in the early 20th century began to lay out his understanding of how everything worked in our universe, one of the things he described is this sense of how space and time are related to each other. He described a fabric of our universe that we now describe as one word, space-time. So if you think about this fabric of the universe as being a broad sheet, objects like stars and planets create depressions in the fabric of space-time, allowing for this concept of the gravity well in which larger masses make deeper wells. And finally, last year, a collision between two black holes seemed to trigger what we've been able to identify as these gravity waves. Einstein was correct about the existence of gravity waves, and that adds yet another brick to this wall of the idea that he's put forward about what the structure of the universe is and how all these objects relate and interrelate with each other.
All of that serves as a foundation for all the great science and astronomy work that lies ahead this year. Yet, all it takes is going out of doors on a summer day to see something most rare and amazing.
Yes, we're talking about the Great American Eclipse, a total solar eclipse that will be happening in 2017, August 21st. It's a Monday, so when the event begins in the early morning of that day over on the west coast in the northwest corner of the United States, that shadow touches down onto the planet in Oregon, and then it sweeps diagonally across the United States with a path of totality about 60 miles wide, give or take a few more miles, and that will head right off the coast of South Carolina. The last total solar eclipse to traverse the continental United States completely was certainly centuries ago. But the caveat about this is that right here in the Philadelphia area, it will appear only as a partial eclipse. If you'd like to hang around here in Philadelphia and wait until the next total solar eclipse, you could do that. It'll be May 1st, 2079. And if you should miss that one, October 26th, 2144, just a little ways off.
Thanks, Derek, and Happy New Year.
My pleasure, Dave, and Happy New Year to you, too.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, time.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom McDonald for Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up without a space, ways incorporated.